You are listening to CEO Minutes, brought to you by Offutt Kerman, attorneys at law, your perfect legal partner.
My name is Aziz Husseini, managing partner of Fortis Advisory Partners.
So you want to walk us through your background and
sure.
how you came to found Fortis Advisory Partners?
Okay. So I was originally born in Cameroon. That's significant because Abdulaziz Husseini, which is my full first name, is not a common common name. So we came to the United States 25 years ago in August, actually. 1993 is when we came here. Went to Montgomery County Schools, went to UMBC for college where I studied BS. I got a BS in Information Systems. From there, I worked at T. Rowe Price in Owings Mills, the Owings Mills campus. From there, I started doing real estate development while I was an undergrad. Bought my first property when I was 19. Bought my second one at 20. And at 20, I started working for a nonprofit developer in Baltimore, the Druid Heights CDC. So I worked there for about 5 or 6 years. I learned a lot, did a lot of affordable housing based projects, but I realized that I wanted to do more than just affordable housing from a development standpoint. And so left there and started my own company. The first iteration of it was the AZ Group, small commercial development company, which eventually transitioned into having a construction arm, commercial construction arm. From there, landed at more of an advisory role. Did that for a little while, and then I met my partner, and then we started Fortis Advisory Partners in January of 2018, this year.
So what, why real estate, you know, with all the things you could do, plus with your IT background, you know, what got you to thinking to get into real estate, that would work?
So real estate has a couple things that I really like. It's a necessity. It's always going to be a necessity. You can, robots can take over, but you still have to live somewhere. So there's always going to be a need for real estate. I like physical things, physical assets. I loved working at T. Rowe Price, but I was on the I was the business analyst, which meant that I would take the business desires, translate that to code, and work with the junior programmers. And it was great. The only challenge was when we were done, you hit compile and it stays on the screen. We worked on a lot of the back end calculators for 401ks and retirement, stuff like that. So even when it worked, it didn't give me the satisfaction of touching it or being able to point to my asset and say that that's what I created. So I knew that I wanted that, and real estate just ended up being the right fit. Real estate is a lot like writing a computer program. There are a lot of variables. There are fundamental things that you can, boxes you can't go out of. You know, rents have variations. You have zoning laws that you have to contest with. You have limited resources, no matter who you are. It may just be a lot, but it's limited nonetheless. So in real estate, it's the same way. Real estate programming is the same way, right? Your CPU has so much bandwidth. Your internet connection is this, and all these different factors. So for me, computer programming is part art, part science, and real estate is the exact same thing. So real estate allowed me to continue to be creative. Real estate allowed me to not have financial caps, right? And so I think I just love real estate.
Mm-hmm. Leaving T. Rowe wasn't your first entrepreneurial experience. It seemed like you had a lot of entrepreneurial experiences throughout your life.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think every entrepreneur has the typical story, right? Selling papers when he's, So mine was really cheesy. I was 10, maybe, and I started what I knew was going to be the world's best year-round lawn care company. And it was called the Four Seasons, right? Clearly, I did not know anything about trademark infringement or anything of that nature. So, you know, it was exactly what it sounded like. We shoveled snow in the winter, we cut grass in the summer, we rake leaves in the fall, and all that stuff. So, that's when I was 10. By the time I got to high school, I had a pretty cool business. My partner and I, we washed cars after school. So throughout the school day, we would talk to people who needed their car washed, blah, 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 blah. We would leave school, go home, get our equipment, and then we'd come back to school. And it's really funny because we would wash, you know, a lot of the athletes and the faculty as they're reading papers or whatever. And so we did that. So in high school, when I was in high school, that was fun. Got to college. College, I really decided to, try to make some more money. And so a couple things that my cousin and I did. We used to valet park. I don't even know what Bob's company's name is. We were just always there. So we worked with a guy named Bob, and we valet parked at events. We valet parked at, you know, public events, private events, and all types of stuff in and around Baltimore. And then what we would do is we would take our earnings from valet parking and tips. We would go buy cars from a dealer's auction in Mannheim, Pennsylvania. Again, the dealer's auctions, well, that particular auction was high quality cars. So we didn't have to worry about lemons. We didn't have to worry about people calling us and saying, my car doesn't work. So we bought those cars, and this is when eBay and Craigslist was really popular. So we would buy 3 or 4 cars. Typically, well, let me rephrase it. We would buy 3 or 4 cars, sometimes 5, midsummer. If during the course of the year there was a good deal or something like that, we would go back and do it. But we would buy it, get it inspected, get it cleaned. We never had to do repairs, and we would put it on campus, and people would come buy it. So we did that, and then, you know, just like any good business, from a cyclical standpoint, we knew that after the holiday season, people would turn their TVs, or new TVs were coming in. And it was only TVs. We didn't do any other electronics. So we would go buy stuff from Best Buy for pennies on the dollar, turn around and sell them to our friends or whatever the case may be. So, you know, those were the couple different, you know, entrepreneurial endeavors mm-hmm. that I did. I did, or with a partner, before leaving T. Rowe Price mm-hmm. and starting.
And so you mentioned your mom had given you a book with Donahue Peoples, right? Mm-hmm. And that influenced you in doing some more things.
Yeah, so there are two books my mom gave me that really, really shaped my character, my ambition, and my perception of the world. The first book was 7 Spiritual Laws to Success by Deepak Chopra. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those books that I've read and I've reread, right? The older I get, the more perception I get about life, so I reread. And the other book she gave me was The People's Principles by Donahue Peoples, chairman and founder of the People's Corporation, a large developer, started in D.C., then they moved to Miami, and now they're currently in New York. That book was impactful because Don was probably in his mid-40s, early 40s at the time, so there was still... Well, there's still some youth to him, but he was a successful businessman, and he wasn't an entertainer, he wasn't an athlete, and he was respected, and he was just wealthy, and you know, the kind of wealth where you could buy the team as opposed to playing for the team, and that was way more attractive to me. Mm-hmm. So, not only attractive, but a lot more probable, right? Mm-hmm. Because being an athlete is very, very improbable. So that's what really kind of got my brain circling around, you know, not just doing more than just cutting grass, mm-hmm. right? How do you build a real enterprise and create real value for yourself and your family and the community at large? So, yeah.
And so how are you doing that with Fortis, creating value and who are your clients and what do you do for them?
So with Fortis, you know, what we do is we're an asset management company, right? But we're not fiduciary in nature, so we don't take people's money and invest it for them. To the contrary, people typically have the asset or they have the capital, and we guide them as to the best way to utilize that asset or that capital. So we guide them on one side, but we also have the in-house capacity to execute on the advice that we give them. So that's usually what ends up happening. So now some of our clients, we have smaller private equity companies. Everybody knows about the Carlyles and the Blackstones of the world. But there are a lot of asset managers that are, $250 million and below assets under management, and they don't necessarily want to get huge. They like the size of the deals they're doing. So, in those instances, they write up the business plan, they run their spreadsheets, we give them input, but when it's time to execute, they outsource that to us, right? So we'll do the design, or we'll bring in a designer, we'll manage that person. Same thing with the construction, same thing with the project management. Because they don't want to be spending their time kind of in the field, per se. Mm-hmm. So, that's one group of people. Another group is schools, right? If you think about most schools don't do enough construction work to have in-house people and carry that load. So they bring us in to do that for them. Another group is hospitality companies, right? So a hotel is set. You don't go into the hotel business because you want to do capital projects every day, because you want to have guests and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that's where they come in. We come in for hotels, do capital projects for them. We do nonprofits, right? So a nonprofit, most nonprofits, unless they're CDCs, don't really have in-house real estate expertise, as they shouldn't. I mean, they should be doing whatever their mission is, right? But as they grow, as they expand, as they move, as they open other locations, as they open more programs, they often need assistance with the real estate component, right? And a lot of them don't. Most nonprofits don't have. There's only one Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, right? So everybody doesn't have those vast resources. So the resources they do have, it's really important for them to use them as efficiently and as effectively as possible. So that's kind of where we fit in.
And so you were describing to lunch your software program and seeing a need in the market that's not being serviced that you've found.
Yeah. So, kind of like you guys, we found that sweet spot in the middle market where we've identified that companies that use smaller footprints, the company could be huge, but they just may not have a big footprint, they don't get the same kind of attention that large users get, right? So if you're Microsoft opening up an office in anywhere in the world and you're taking 100,000 square feet, the bigger firms are going to come after you. Are going to sell their project management services to you, right? But you're Microsoft, so you have enough resources to figure it out if you really wanted to. But if you're a successful company that just raised money and your projects are solid and you just need more space to get the more people, you're kind of thrown to the wolves, right? So that usually means, 10,000 square feet and below. The bigger firms aren't interested. So, and the reason they're not interested is because the procurement cost is relatively the same. So they're gonna spend the same amount of energy taking you to lunch and your presentation and all this other stuff. So what we said is, how do we make it more efficient and effective for us to get those customers and serve them? Because if you're smaller, you probably need our help more than the guys that are bigger, right? So what we did was I dusted off my programming cobwebs in my brain, and we wrote we created a portal online on our website, and I did the back end algorithm of it. And basically what it allows people to do is go online, input their company information, your current address, employees, and things of that nature, input the project information, where the new space is gonna be, what level of finish you're requiring, and the square footage. Those are the two determining factors of a lot of the pricing. And then what you want us to do. So we have capacity in-house to design the space, construction manage the space, and program, project manage the space. And project management, people really don't know what that means. So furniture, dealing with Comcast, making sure that, if you're a heavy internet user, your fiber line comes to your building within a reasonable amount of time. Signage and all that fun stuff, mm-hmm. Ordering utilities and all, so all that falls under the project management umbrella. Clients have the option to select what they want us to do. And then the program spits out a number. The design fee will be this, the project management fee will be this, and then the construction estimate will be that. Mm-hmm. obviously these are estimates. We try to make them as accurate as possible, but we're also relying on the user input accurate information, right? So garbage in, garbage out. For the most part, we're pretty accurate. We also give you a list of assumptions from which we're saying we're working from. If that's not accurate, then obviously the quote's not going to be accurate. Mm-hmm. But that's the turnkey product that we're going to be rolling out, you know, July 1st. And we've had brokers testing it out just to work out some of the kinks and contractors to test it out to make sure the numbers are in the right ballpark based on the level of finish selected. So.
And what's your expectation that this will do for your company, this software project, and how much it will grow you or how it will change your business model?
So I had lunch with Jim yesterday, and I was telling Jim about old man Pat Arrakis, right? So Pat Arrakis, what's this company's called?
H&S.
H&S Bakery, right? So they H&S. Are the number one provider of hamburger buns east of the Mississippi to McDonald's and a lot of these other corporations, right? And so that allowed him the flexibility to do other things, right? Because he knew that no matter what, at 6 a.m., those hamburger bun machines were gonna start, right? This is what for our company, these are our hamburger buns. It's automated. It doesn't take much effort on our end until it gets to a certain threshold, a certain point, and we can crank out a high volume, and we can touch as many people as possible and help as many people as possible. And in turn, that helps us. So we're really looking for this to be the foundation of the company. And then all the other stuff will just be, you know, additional layers of what we do. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're anticipating.
And then not too long ago, you met your current partner and then you guys decided to take some DC, Virginia work go to DC and get some work down there. And what was the rationale behind that?
So my partner, he lives in Northern Virginia. So he had already had a book of business in DC and Northern Virginia.
You probably want to mention his name.
Yeah. So Brett Griffith is my partner. So Brett is actually from Columbia, but he lives in Northern Virginia now. He had a book of business and clients in DC already. And we just thought it'd be prudent to spread ourselves out geographically. I live in Baltimore already, and he lives in Northern Virginia already, so it just made sense on one level. On the other level, DC just has a lot more velocity than most places in the country. So especially when you're thinking of, you know, if rental rates are really high, then that means that people are getting smaller spaces for the most part, right? So that means that it's even better for us to be in that market with that much volume happening at the smaller square foot range. So that's kind of how that happened.
Do you guys back to Baltimore a second?
Sure.
You know, with so much opportunity to develop stuff, maybe from some of it socially conscious to mm-hmm. also there's, you know, there's private and profit to be made.
Mm-hmm.
But do you guys balance any of that where, you know, you're helping the city develop? I don't know how to formulate the question. Is there an opportunity to do social good and make money in Baltimore through real estate? That's a better way to look at it.
We think that there's opportunity to do social good and make money. There are a couple factors, though. So let me take a step back. My partner and I, we got together because we realized a couple things, right? So he'd had his business for 12 years before we got together, and I'd had mine for 5 years. And so we'd been through the ups and downs of having a pure development company, right? And we realized that that's just not, we weren't set up that way, right? You know, if you think about real development, it was typically an older white man business. Not only that, but established, right? So you would make your money in the railroads and you'd preserve your wealth in real estate, right? So I guess I understand now why they did it that way, because development in and of itself is unpredictable. And it's expensive and all these other things, right? So, and at the end of the day, you could have the best real estate deal in the world, but there's some macro events that can happen that you have absolutely no control over. And if you're not set up appropriately, if you don't have, you know, the cash reserves, if you don't have the emotional reserves to kind of weather the storm, you're not going to make it out. So We think that from a pure development standpoint, there are those opportunities, but we're just a lot more selective now. Things really have to line up, especially the more of a social component there is, the more input and support we need from the local municipality. And that doesn't necessarily mean money. It may just mean we'll stay out of your way. It may just mean that we understand that the community can't see the vision right now, but we'll help you usher it through the process. That's our only caveat. And then when we think about from a development standpoint where we are in the market cycle, we're, on the latter side of a recovery. And it may last for another 7-10 years, nobody knows, but it also may not, mm-hmm. right? So we have to prepare ourselves for the eventuality of, it's gonna stop mm-hmm. at some point, and just hope that it's not next week and, mm-hmm. it's 7 years.
And I can't remember the timing of starting your business, but did you live through the 2008?
I came in 2008.
Okay, wow.
He lived through 2008.
So you started the company in 2008?
No, so I joined the nonprofit in 2008.
Okay.
Yeah. So he had his company 12 years ago, whenever that is. That's 2006 he started his company. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, do you want to describe some of the different projects that you've worked on and
what
the success of them have been?
Yeah, so, when I was at the nonprofit, we did a lot of work in Reservoir Hill. Maybe about 30 units in Reservoir Hill. And the success can be seen in the sales price of properties. The first house we did in Reservoir Hill, we had it listed for $200. Somebody bought it for $200. The appraisal came in at $185, right? So the last round of house of projects I did for in Reservoir Hill sold for $275, mm-hmm. and they appraised, and they sold before construction was done. It was 8 houses, and all 8 sold before we finished construction. Mm-hmm. Right? Some people waited like 3 months, 4 months. So that was a very successful project.
And do you know, were they the residents of Reservoir Hill that were able to...
It was a mixture. Mm-hmm. I think they were all Baltimore residents, mm-hmm. but they weren't all Reservoir Hill residents. Right. Right? 'Cause a lot of them, a good portion of them were Hopkins students that were okay. graduating and starting residency and awesome. Things of that nature. Yeah, we had a couple of young families. That was probably the most rewarding project I've ever done, because we basically took an entire block and renovated it, and then I went back, I don't know, for whatever reason, and a mom was there, she was pregnant, and she had her 5-year-old that had the space to run and not be on top of her, and it was a quality home, she didn't have to worry about lead paint. That was probably the most rewarding project that I've done. Another project that we did, my partner did the Lenore, which is in downtown Baltimore. It was an adaptive reuse of an old office building. It's a really nice project. I think it's about 125, 150 units. He did a fantastic job there. I did I had a nonprofit client, Pi Omega Fraternity. We redid their frat house. I mean, they're older mm-hmm. men, but their frat house. Completely gutted it and put it back together for them. Mm. It hadn't been touched in 20, 30 years. So that was cool. If anybody's familiar with Mustang Alley in Baltimore, my partner actually did that. The entire complex, it's Mustang Alley. It's a Thai restaurant, Heavy Seas, Davidus Cigar Shop, I think maybe something else. Mm-hmm. So my partner was the owner's representative on that, and he was effectively the contractor on that project. Mm-hmm. So we've done some work for the Hyatt Hotel. We've done a couple relatively large, we did all the public bathrooms, the back of house employee spaces. It's a nice variety. Well, right now we're finishing up a project for the Madeira School, which is in McLean, Virginia. It's a beautiful campus, 300 acres on the Potomac. It's an all-girls boarding school, equestrian facilities, uh-huh. and all the fun stuff you can think of. So we now know how to build equestrian facilities. that's one of my partner's relationships, and it's turned out really well. Everybody seems to be really happy with the product. So we're kind of going to be there for a little, somewhat of a long time. This year, we're doing the dorms. There are two dorms. Doing one dorm this year, one dorm next year, and then some utility work to bring. I think it was built in the 30s, in the 1930s, so kind of bring up everything up to code and up to standards.
This has been CEO Minutes, brought to you by Offit Kerman, attorneys at law, your perfect legal partner. For more information and to tell your entrepreneurial story, visit us on the web at ceominutes.com.